Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bell. I find it interesting.
Thanks for making us your sports station.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Quick reminder, Atlanta soccer fans, and a big shout-out to Jason Longshore jumping on, and we appreciate his input. You can join Sports Radio 92.9 The Game at Carriage Kia in Woodstock from noon to 2 this Saturday for a meet-and-greet with Atlanta soccer players Michael Parkhurst and Jeff Lorenowitz. Please check them out, guys. Mike Conti is going to be out there, Longshore as well. They'll be broadcasting live, talking all things Atlanta soccer. So stop by for a chance to win some cool prizes and autographed Michael Parkhurst jersey. We're going to talk some NFL on the way. We're going to get some hoops talk as well. Brackets, I'm still feeling my brackets out as we speak.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I tried to give it, you know, some of those upsets, you know, the 12-5 and all that, and yada, yada. It's all chalk, man. It's chalk in FSU. It's all chalk. I did it backwards. Starting the Final Four, work your way out.
Okay.
I just went Florida State and chalk and a few minor upsets like Villanova, maybe, even though they're not that team that they were last year or the year before with Jay Wright. But yeah, man, I got chalk. It's an all ACC Final Four, including the Seminoles.
Wow, that's strong. Three number one seeds out of the ACC. I do three. I do one immediately after they announce the brackets, just on feel and what I know. And then I go back and I do another one, which is today's bracket. And then I will do my final bracket before Wednesday's play-in games, which I know some people don't think that's the tournament. I don't either. I still see the tournament as Thursday when it starts. Right. But the play-in games will be Wednesday. And so that's when Wednesday morning I'll have mine completely done, Mike, so I can win this money.
But let's keep it real, guys. It's always a young woman in an office somewhere who goes by her favorite colors. Or somebody like an idiot like me who picks teams based on team names that end in vowels. Okay, everybody's got some grab bag system.
Yeah, they do.
And that's the person to win the big, gigantic ESPN poll. Although now there's a million of these where you can actually win a million.
All right, we'll talk about that. Deshaun's going to join us coming up here on the program. Also, guys, Georgia State's head basketball coach Ron Hunter's going to join us in studio in the 4 o'clock hour to talk about his team. They are back dancing 2 years in a row. I will say this, for mid-majors, it's just harder. And it's unfortunate. It's kind of the way the tournament is built. You can win 28, 29 games, Mike, not win your conference tournament, and be out. And for Ron Hunter and Georgia State, they've been able to do that for the last couple of seasons and win their tournament. But, you know, I just wish that that would change. It's not changed in many years. So this is the hard part about being a mid-major. You can be an average team in a big Power 5 conference and still get in.
Right.
And, you know, some of these mid-majors get overlooked. So we'll talk to him about this experience and what he thinks about his team. They will take on Houston, by the way, which is very good. But they lost their championship game in their conference tournament.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier, how bad Tennessee looked losing to Auburn. Yikes. You know, Duke did what they did, and UVA does what they did. I was surprised. For a minute there, I thought Michigan State, you could have argued, to beat Michigan three times, to win the Big Ten, and to kind of get hosed. They're not. And basically, they literally, Carl, went to MapQuest and figured out it was going to be less from East Lansing to some of the East region was actually closer than actually send them to Kansas City, which a lot of Spartan fans are saying is a bunch of nonsense.
All right, guys, we got plenty on the show today, so we'll talk Falcons as well as they decide to bring back a tight end, which is kind of surprising over the weekend. Right now, though, let's get to an NFL Blitz!
Welcome to the NFL. With news and notes from around the league, this is NFL Blitz on Dukes and Bell.
All right, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Mike. Fitzmagic.
Fitzmagic of South Beach.
Is now in Miami, baby. I don't know if you're buying into this or not, or if you even believe Ryan Fitzpatrick was that good last season. He had his moments. He's always had his moments. But he decides to head to Miami. And after the trade we talked about with Ryan Tannehill, Mike, to the Titans, you know, this kind of opened up the door.
It's not even the 2019 season beginning, and already you've got columnists. Our good buddy Armando Salguero is asking the question, are the Dolphins going to tank and try to get the Tua Tagovailoa? They don't believe in any of the quarterbacks in this draft class, and they are going to literally put it. No, no team's going to admit that, and fan bases are always going to throw that stuff out there. But the idea that you're going to actually just go get down for Tua for Miami, that sounds ridiculous to me.
It does for me as well. as far as the Dolphins, I don't know what to think right now.
They are a hot mess.
Yes. I don't know what to think as far as where they're headed, what the future holds. Remember, Teddy Bridgewater was, you know, thinking about it, and then he ends up, you know, re-signs with New Orleans. So
after Drew Brees moved his money up to create space, I didn't think they were going to use that money to, you know, keep their backup. But Bridgewater may have some traction there once Drew Brees does walk away, probably after this year.
All right, so more guys landing in the world of free agency. Down in New Orleans, the Big Easy. Remind me to tell you a story, too, this weekend about New Orleans. Saints sign Nick Easton. Now you're going, okay, so what's the big deal? Well, Max Unger retires. That is a big deal.
Yeah. That's the guy they traded Jimmy Graham for, and certainly it paid dividends. Look, they were certainly, I don't have to tell Saints fans how the last two seasons ended. Unger got him basically where Alex Mack got us. We actually got farther with Alex Mack. Unger made sense. But, yeah, walking away, they've got to plug in. Who is Nick Easton?
Well, what do Saints do?
Boy, I hope that's the case this year's draft as well. He is a guy, Mike, that's going to play center, obviously.
He's 26, Saints fans that live here in Atlanta, but he missed all of last season because of surgery to repair a herniated disc in his neck. Sounds great.
Mm. So they give him 4 years, $24 million contract, former Vikings guard and center, Nick Easton. Unger was the glue to that offensive line, okay? And here's what's funny. We had our issues after the, you know, 12 season where in 14 and 15 our offensive line was a hot mess.
Mm-hmm.
And we go get the stabilizer. They did a very similar thing. Those three seasons of 7-9, 7-9, 7-9 for the Saints, they could protect Brees. And even though he gets rid of the football, they were getting pressure right up the middle. And then Unger comes in and stabilizes their O-line, Mike. And let's be honest, that running game with Kamara and company,
right,
it's been really good. This is a big change, and I'm curious to see how it affects New Orleans' offense, especially their passing game, long term. Because now, this is why, again, Falcons, go get me a big defensive tackle who can make plays.
Now, we threw it out there the other day because the Saints, the Patriots, they move on from Adrian Claiborne. And I was talking about this. Jeff Schultz was on the conversation on Twitter. What's up, Schultzy? And saying at 30, obviously, you know the Patriots were not going to see 2 years of that contract, right, with Claiborne. They release him. But because of his familiarity with our system and the fact that he's, you know, could probably be got at relatively cheap price, would you be interested in kicking the tires on Claiborne? I would still love to see us go get Bruce Irvin.
Yeah.
But either way, you want any of those guys? Claiborne to meh for you now?
Well, no. It just depends on what the options are. I mean, Bruce obviously, you know, played here last year, wants to be here, I think, just, you know, playing at home. But I also think he still has game left. I'm not into guys just because I like their names or they've done something elsewhere. He can't play. I don't want him. I still think Bruce has game. Claiborne, I was talking with guys at Meehan's about this over the weekend, and they were like, would you take Claiborne back? Yes, I absolutely would. Now, I don't know what his interest level is, but Mike, you know, he tweeted out that it was a tweet about the Patriots thanking them and saying, you know, thank you for teaching me how to be a champion and all this stuff. I was like, ooh, I don't know if it was a shot. But going there and experiencing that and coming back to help us, I'm fine with it if that's what he wants.
Now, the Cincinnati Bengals guys, who give you the NFL blitz, they finally move on from one of the more controversial figures in the NFL, Vontaze Burfict. The guy's a one-man wrecking crew, headhunter, meathead, some would say. But because the Bengals are and the way they operate, they always try to go for value. Guys at fall where they might have been, before they screwed up, they would have been a much higher pick. And they were able to go get these guys for less money. But they finally move on from Vontaze Burfict. He was signed by Marvin Lewis. Of course, Marvin Lewis ain't there either. He was due to make $5 million this year in his base salary. He gone.
Yeah, I consider him to be a knucklehead. You know, he got time and time again, he continued to hurt his football team on and off the field. Haloti Ngata, Mike, retires, 35 years old. You know, if you go back to his draft, he was the number 12 overall selection. We have the 14th overall pick.
Mm.
You can find difference makers. This guy went to 5 Pro Bowls, won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. Ray Lewis has talked about it. They were a different team when they drafted him because that was the guy that protected Ray to run sideline to sideline. We have a guy that runs sideline to sideline as well named Deion Jones. So I'm just saying, congratulations on a great career. He's 35. He called it quits. But this is what we're saying in this particular draft. This is the kind of guy that's out there. We got to find him.
Now, guys, we've been talking a lot about how these contracts get written. Coaches have got some provisions. The guys all got hired here in the offseason, Carl, about making sure they're getting paid after 2020.
Yeah.
Because there is going to be – I mean, maybe they can find a way to fix it.
Well, you keep saying it. You keep saying it.
Everybody we've talked to, we talked to a couple of guys that are agents and former players saying that there's going to be work stoppage. The CBA, the way the discipline's been doled out by Goodell, the way that maybe some owners, Carl, quite honestly, the way the Antonio Brown situation and the Le'Veon Bell went down, they might want to restructure the way some of the rules are written. Reason I bring it up is – a session between a group of players and a group of agents went down on Monday. It's all in conjunction with the Players Association's annual meetings. And based on communication with multiple sources, it didn't go well. The current CBA agreement expires in less than 2 years. A lot of players feeling that DeMaurice Smith might have looked good on first blush, but just because you don't have to do two-a-days, and that was one of the big selling points, they conceded far too much. It sounds like the owner's going to want some back, and the players might want some more. Either way, I don't think we're going to have a lot of football in 2021.
What's the biggest issue facing the league? What's the number one thing the players want? And then what is it the owners want, and will there be concessions? You know, Mike, some people will tell you, all right, it's the economic aspect of things. Some guys will tell you, all right, some of the restrictions that players currently have, they want some of those restrictions moved. I just don't know what the number one issue is as far as players. And they go, we got to get this changed.
Players want the franchise tag to go away.
That's a given.
Right. That's never going to go away. Now, they might modify it. But, I mean, they're not going to put less money onto that figure. It's always going to be, what are you going to average out to the top six players? Is that what you're going to do? That's what the owners are going to do.
Right.
And the players are saying to make it average to the top three players in the position. Right now, it's the average of the top five. But more will be on this, guys. But there's some pretty good articles out there at NFL Network, NFL.com, about some of the things that they're arguing about right now. But the franchise tag seems to be one. I threw this out here 2 weeks ago. If the owners want to use a carrot on a stick, taking marijuana off the banned substance list is a hell of a strategy to use, brother. Mm. I know it sounds like an oversimplification, but if you were able to get these knuckleheads to sign off on taking two-a-days away, you don't think the weed thing might play?
It might.
I'm just saying it could be a chip at the bargaining table.
No,
it might actually work.
I know, and we heard from guys, but I think we had this conversation. We're out at Twin Peaks, and guys were like, it's illegal. In some states, yes. Some states, not. But we're talking specifically about the NFL. I understand where some guys are going with that. We're just talking hypothetically. You're in the boardroom. You're in the meeting room. What are we talking about here? What's gonna get us to an agreement for a new collective bargaining agreement? I think that's what we're talking about. Bottom line is NFLPA and the agents meeting doesn't go well. That's not what you want to hear.
I mean, and here's the other thing. Two things might happen. Worst off, there's nothing that would – unless we see how Roger Goodell handles all the other discipline he's got to deal with now, including, as you know, on Friday as the show was ending, we find out about Tariq Hill's situation.
Yeah.
Is Roger Goodell going to be commissioner when we have this next CBA and the next contract negotiations, Carl, after the 2020 season? Well, the owners, remember there's a group like a, we don't know how big this crew is. Obviously, Bob Kraft's got more things on his plate right now. But who are the owners that want to move Goodell out? Who are the players that want to move DeMaurice Smith out? Because there's a lot of unhappy guys with the leadership of the union.
Yeah, and remember, you know, the rumor out there, this is going back probably a month or two now, where some owners were interested in contacting the NBA commissioner
right
to take things over.
Adam Silver, come here and fix this.
So, yeah, man, it is an interesting question, but we bring it up not because we won't have football in the fall. We will.
We got 2 more years of football, guys. They got 2 years to figure this out.
So,
remember, last time we had all this hullabaloo, it was 2011. The owners met right down here at the airport, right? Squid, it was like the Sheraton or the Marriott, whatever the airport is.
Yep.
Hotel, and they ironed it out, and we got back to football. But it was close.
Here's the thing, Mike. And you know, in this day and age with the sports landscape being what it is, maybe idiots, all right, to have a work stoppage. They just would be. And I'm not saying that from the player standpoint. I'm saying the owners. Owners are making a killing. And they would be idiots to have a work stoppage. With the momentum, the flow, you've got a new TV contract that will be negotiated here in a couple of years. It all depends on the game. And so we'll see where it goes, but that's why we're talking about it. It is Dukes and Bellis, our NFL Blitz segment. Hey, man, coming up, we got a lot more to get to, including will this be the best year of Jake Fromm? That's on the way at 4 o'clock as part of our dog report. And when we come back, though, the weekend. All right, your wife goes away. She sends a few pictures,
uh-oh,
but you're wondering what's going on. I will explain next. It is Dukes and Bell. Hope you had a great St. Paddy's Day weekend. Mike, I know you were enjoying McCray's, right? You were at McCray's over the weekend?
Oh, God. I was everywhere. We started at Fideau. We wound up at Re-Raw. And then we were over at McCray's, and it was on like King Kong, man. Holy moly. Great time, though. We saw a lot of old friends. Our buddy Bobby Donlan.
What's up, Bobby?
Who manages New York Prime. So I'm marching with the Hibernians. And saw the Batmobile with the Penguin in. I thought it was John Fricke for a second.
It wasn't?
No. But no, the pictures are up there on Mike Bell ATL. But we need to get more pipes and drum bands into the parade itself. With all due respect to the parade, Llamas are cool, but there's really no. I don't remember St. Patrick riding a llama, Carl, when he slew all the snakes there in the Emerald Isle.
Yeah, I do like llamas too, but I would have thought there'd be more pipes and drums involved.
I know Savannah draws a lot of water on this party, but yeah, next year we need a little more bands, guys. Back to you, Carl.
All right, man. Big shout out to everybody that came out to Meehan's. My wife went to New Orleans over the weekend for St. Patty's Day week.
Oh my God, weekend. You let that happen?
Well, it was a girls' weekend. They had planned it, and you know, I wasn't thinking about it. It was fine, sure, go whatever you want to do.
What could possibly go wrong?
So I feel like, Mike, you seen that Vegas commercial where the woman comes back home and her husband's like, so how was your trip? And she's like, oh, let me show you the pictures.
Right.
And they're stick figures. She's drawn all the pictures. She has no evidence of what happened over the weekend. It's all like
it's a smart play.
And this is when we were out taking pictures. And it's like stick figures. And this is us at the club. And this is us on bourbon. So anyways, she was down there, and it seemed like it was bananas down there. I've never been for St. Patty's Day. But she sent me a photo of Pato's. Mm-hmm. They now have a drink. The Hurricane. It was obviously dyed green. That is for eight or nine people, Mike. It's like... It's like 3 feet long.
You and I saw the pictures of this thing. It really—it's almost like a garbage can of Pat O'Brien's Hurricane dyed green.
Yeah, and I'm like, who's drinking this? So she shows this picture to me, and I'm like, hey, how's it going? Crickets. Hey, what's going on? Crickets. So I'm wondering now. I'm waiting for her to get home to hear about this story after seeing that Pato's that hurricane that they might have gone after.
Dang, that's like the old days of like Lulu's. But I mean, that's one thing. I mean, you got to see the picture of this thing. It's bananas. All right. It's well, huge. Here's the thing. We've been down in New Orleans for a Final Four, which is always a great time.
It is.
Now
we get it next year. By the way, for those folks who are not familiar, Atlanta, we get it the Final Four next year
at Mercedes-Benz. But now here to talk some hoops with us. If you hadn't followed his blogs, he's always money. It's our man, Deshaun Tate.
This is Tate's Take with Deshaun Tate. Featuring NCAA college basketball on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, Deshaun, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the ACC and three number one seeds. Did you think Michigan State got job? Because I heard a lot of that yesterday, and especially with them beating Michigan again,
right.
A lot of people thought they got job. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I definitely felt that way. But at the end of the day, you know, when you're talking about a team that got swept on the season by an Indiana team that lost about 15 games this year, lost to Illinois, games that they had no business losing. Last time Michigan State was in a very similar position, at least somewhat similar position as this 2016 season it was, and they were arguing about being a number one and got jobbed and ended up getting the best two, and then they lost in the first round of the tournament to MTSU and actually has not got out of the first round of or the first weekend of the NCAA tournament since then. But you know, I personally feel like everybody starts this thing 0-0. You go out there, you win the games you're supposed to win, you don't have that problem, and now they're kind of in a different situation. But Michigan State would be fine. They've gotten to the Final Four as a 7 seed, 5 seed, you name it.
All right, let's talk about it, man. We were just saying it's mostly chalk and it's all ACC, but is this the year because of the upperclassmen? They did beat Duke earlier this year, but what do you make of Gonzaga? Is this year the Zags finally do it?
I don't know. You know, that's one of those funky regions. They're in a tough region. I think that between Duke's region in the East and Gonzaga's region in the West, they surely didn't get any favors there. I think Virginia and North Carolina kind of got more favorable regions, if you will. But, you know, Gonzaga being one of those teams, they're returning a lot of guys that went to the Final Four and actually the national championship game 2 years ago in Arizona where they lost to North Carolina. But you know, Gonzaga's one of those teams. They're strong. They're the only team to beat Duke when they were at full health. But it wouldn't surprise me. I think the more concerning thing for me that maybe not a lot of people are paying attention to is of all the 8 and 9 seeds and all the 8-9 games, Syracuse is probably the toughest one for anybody. And, of course, that's who Gonzaga would have up next.
That dreaded 2-3 zone. So in that region, Florida State's the one you said might be they're a 4 seed, but they're so athletic. Could they make it happen?
I hear so many people talking about how much they love Florida State, but I've been talking a little bit about Texas Tech.
Bias.
With the homer a little bit.
What you talking about?
I don't know. I mean, I like the things that Texas Tech has done. You know, but outside of Iowa State, I really believe that they are the team that could potentially or have the best chances at representing the Big 12. We talked about Jared Culver. This is also, we talked about Florida State getting to the Elite Eight last year, so they're obviously really experienced. Well, so is Texas Tech. They got to the Elite Eight last year. They're really experienced as well. Chris Beard doing a phenomenal job over there, and they're one of the best defensive teams in the country.
It is Deshaun Tate, guys. We're talking NCAA tournament. Brackets are out. Ron Hunter's going to join us as Georgia State gets in the tournament again. Coming up next hour, Virginia has, do they have the easiest path of the number ones?
Yeah, it looks that way. I think it's really close with what North Carolina has in their region, but just the way that this thing is shaping out, just the way I'm looking at it, Virginia, because of the fact that I think they put Tennessee in there as expected to be one of the better two seeds, if you will. And, you know, when you're looking at Virginia, I think it's kind of set up for Virginia to get out and to get to the Final Four. I've been the guy that's been, you know, talking about Virginia all year long, saying that they're a lock for my Final Four before these brackets even came out. Before the first ball was tipped up in the air, I said, I just have that really good feeling this will be the year to do it. I mean, we sat back and we saw so many different teams that we said, hey, for years, they've got to eventually do it. They've got to eventually do it. Gonzaga, we said the same thing about Gonzaga getting to the Final Four forever until they eventually did it. Same thing with Villanova winning national championship, and until 2016, they hadn't done it in a while. So, you know, I think that this would be the year for a team like Virginia.
Virginia, by the way, this is the best offensive team Tony Bennett's had. Okay, they always play D, but this is the best offensive team, and that's why a lot of people are jumping on there, Mike. And then, DeAndre Hunter and Kyle Guy, these guys can play, man. If you've not seen this particular version of Virginia, I'm buying in too. I think they get there this year.
But hold on. I said this earlier, though. Okay, take it back to the NBA and the 60-win Hawks season.
Okay.
Who's the guy? Buzzer beater. Game on the line. Who's the guy stepping up for UVA?
Ty Jerome.
You know what? It could be Ty Jerome. The good thing about it is that there may be multiple guys that are all equal to being able to hit that shot. So you can kind of look at it from a glass half full, half empty type.
So when I ask you who's the Mac, there's no Mac. It's a bunch of sum of its parts, guys, what you're telling me.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
It is DeSean Tate, guys. Hey, as we talk about Georgia State's matchup with the Cougs, Houston, it's 3 versus a 14 seed. I know Ron Hunter's going to say seeding doesn't matter, and when you go into this tournament, that's how you have to think. How much of a task is it, and how unbelievable would it be for Georgia State maybe to advance to next week and get to the Sweet 16?
I don't really think that it'll be that big of a task. Now, we're talking Sweet 16. I think that might be something a little bit different just because of the fact that I expect Iowa State to be right there. I mean, I personally feel like if Georgia State can find a way to beat a Houston team who's really good, and then maybe even Iowa State, if they're sitting right there, I mean, why not try and go for, you know, whoever else is sitting right there, Wofford or Kentucky or whomever, whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, they got work to do. What's in front of them first. My biggest concern with Georgia State this year is that, you know, from the middle of the season towards the tail end, you know, they won some games that they were supposed to win, but they also lost some games I thought they were supposed to win, and they weren't looking nearly as strong as I thought that they would have come out and looked this season. Obviously, at
Do you think they were? I don't want to say bored, but again, you see them win the conference championship.
No, I think they were trying a lot of those games, and a lot of those games they were not just losing, but they were getting beat by double digits, and it wasn't leaving a good feeling or a good taste in my mouth. I will say this much, though. You know, everybody talks about DeMarcus Simons and the stud that he is, the kind of talent he is, and he's obviously really good. If they can find a way to put the surrounding cast around him to all play well together at the same time, I think that's where they can make some noise. So in some cases, you have where DeMarcus Simons is playing well, and then Malik Bentlevy is playing well, but Devin Mitchell and Jeff Thomas is not having great games. If they can find a way for guys that don't have to have great games, but if they can just have solid games or just barely above average games, not single-digit games, if everybody can kind of chip in 8 points here, 10 points here, 12 there, I think that's when they can put it all together and then make a deep run.
It is our man, DeSean Tate, guys, at Tate's Take Sports. You can follow his blogs that he does a great job with. Now, again, it's a little creepy, but DeSean's Dungeon, is that the name we're calling the segment?
Yeah, DeSean's Dungeon, man, take you deep down under.
Okay, that sounds kind of creepy again. But anyway, let's talk SEC. Kentucky is a two seed. We talked earlier about another two seed, Michigan State. What about this version of the Wildcats? Nobody, after what Tennessee just did, is buying the – unfortunately, Rick Barnes' resume is on full display here. They're trending the wrong way.
I'm going with Abilene Christian.
What?
Okay, I'm not doing that. No, I mean, you start looking at this Kentucky team, sometimes you start thinking about, like, what makes them so different from all the other Kentucky teams that are supposed to be really good. And there's not really a whole lot that kind of separates them. I'm glad to see that they do get Reed Travis back, who's a transfer from Stanford, and obviously a kid from here in Georgia, from Newton County, goes by the name of Ashton Higgins, who's really good defensively, put some offensive to that defensive side of his game. And they're good, but, you know, expecting that they might meet up with Wofford or a rematch where they lost to Seton Hall earlier this year at Madison Square Garden, ended up going to overtime. That was a really good game. But I think who was the other one you asked me about, Tennessee?
Yeah, Tennessee, because unfortunately they get smoked. Not only just beat, they get smoked by Auburn.
Let me tell you what you don't do. You don't lose to Auburn. If LSU, who won the conference, is right there in or not right there in your way, standing in your way to win the conference tournament. And your biggest issue that you have in front of you is Kentucky, and you beat them on the way there. If all you worried about is Auburn, who I think is completely fool's gold at this point, who you also don't want to take in your bracket, even for that 5-12 matchup, classic upset. I don't believe in Rick Barnes, and I've been saying it all season long. I'm just not a believer. He showed me why in the conference tournament. He showed me why by not winning the conference. Mm-hmm. All of the above, he had these opportunities. You go on 19 game winning streak,
and now
you're trending down.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm not a believer by any stretch of the imagination.
Deshaun, give us a surprise team we should be watching. Is it New Mexico State? Is it Murray State? I mean, give us a team that people are going to go, okay, next weekend, or when we come back after this first weekend of play, we're going to be talking about them.
Put them up. See, Duke's trying to get inside of the answer key over here.
Yes,
man.
I am.
Okay, cool. I got you. Let's go. I like Old Dominion as a 14 seed in the South over Purdue. I'm not a believer in a one-man show like Carson Edwards. I think they're prized for an upset. They can win a game or two. New Mexico State can win a game or two. I already teased a little bit about their upset over Auburn. I think the next game right there would be Kansas. That would be a perfect situation for them. I also think that Belmont, being a team that was on the outside looking in, barely got in out of the OVC. Murray State put them out in the conference tournament. They found a way to get in. It's perfect for them to find a way to beat Temple in the games that are going to be coming up in the first four in the next couple days. You win one there, and then you beat Maryland, who's a six seed, and then who knows what can happen from there.
You like Buffalo, too? Buffalo's a team nobody's watched for the most part. They can play.
Buffalo can play. They've gone from being the hunter to the hunted now. They got the target on their back. However, it'll be interesting to see what happens with them in the matchup moving on in the next round between Arizona State and St. John's. Another first four matchup coming up in the next couple days.
Hey, man, St. John's, by the way, we talked about when Josh Pastner's going to get things turned around. You couldn't look any worse than Chris Mullins' red storm a few years back, and now he's finally got things cooking.
Yeah, they lost to a D3 school his first year coming in there by 32 points, for crying out loud.
D, thank you so much. Give me your Twitter one more time.
At Tates Take Sports. Go and follow it. TATESTAKE Sports.
Talking NCAA tournament. When we come back, it's In Case You Missed It with Mike Conte. Next.
On Dukes and Bell.
In case you missed it, brought to you by our friends at Resurgence Orthopedics. Guys, go see them. Great experience, great doctors from neck to toes, muscles and bones. Get moving again with Resurgence Orthopedics. Mike Conte is here. What's going on, Mike?
There are many situations in life that I really hope I'll never find myself in. This would be right at the top of the list. There's a dive tour operator in South Africa who claims, and people have witnessed this, that he was snorkeling in the Indian Ocean, and he was swallowed by a whale. And like, there are witnesses to corroborate this story. In fact, someone even got pictures of it.
Like, just swallowed.
Yes. Pinocchio.
I got to look this
Like in Pinocchio.
Like Jonah and the whale.
Or I'm not familiar with that story, but I'll take your word for it.
Wow.
Pinocchio got swallowed by a whale, right? And then he and Geppetto, like, they made the whale a home, basically. Like, They camped out in there and started a fire, and the whale had to spit them out.
This is rare, though, right? Whales don't just swallow people.
To my knowledge, this seems to be very rare. But the guy, 51-year-old Rainier Shrimp, says he was snorkeling in an area where sardines were schooling, and whales like to eat sardines, just like humans. And I guess, according to this guy, the whale mistook him for a sardine. Swallowed him whole. Here's his quote. There is no time for any fear or emotion. I knew instantly what had happened. I knew that a whale had come and taken me, and I instinctively held my breath, assuming that he would dive down again and spit me out somewhere in the ocean. Whales can sometimes go underwater for 5 to 15 minutes. That would not have been a good thing for this guy if he had gone down with the whale. The whale apparently realized, oops, I swallowed a human, not a sardine.
And he was a salty South African, Carl. You never remember Jonah and the whale? You didn't in Bible school when you were a kid? Jonah and the whale?
No.
Jonah swallowed by the whale? Old Testament?
Did Jonah get out?
Yes.
Yeah,
he did. Okay, well, this guy's...
He got out.
Modern-day Jonah.
That's the amazing thing, is that he got out.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Well, I mean, obviously the whale has a taste for sardines and not for human, which I understand. But that's nightmare fuel, though.
No, it is.
You know, like, when we went down to the Keys a couple weeks ago, my wife wanted me to go snorkeling. I'm like, no. And that's the reason why. I know there are no whales off the Keys.
The ocean is the shark's house.
Exactly, or in this case, the whale's house.
I've been snorkeling all over the place, man. It's not that. Come on. This is an aberration.
And if you snorkel on the bay side, they have they don't call them alligators down there. They call them crocodiles. Too many things that can take you out. I'm good. I'll observe the water. You know, I'll eat what comes out of the water.
What are the odds, Mike? Come on.
Scuba diving. I'm kind of with you, and I know there are a lot of scuba guys that go to various places across the earth and scuba dive, but that's where I'm a little bit of weary.
Yes.
Snorkeling thing, I'm still on top. I can get out, right?
Yeah,
there is an easy escape. That is true.
Well, you're looking down at the water. You can see everything below you.
Yeah.
Yeah, if the shark's coming from behind you, you're dead meat.
But, I am so uncoordinated.
I'm getting away.
I've never even really been able to figure out how the snorkel actually works. Like, the snorkel to me is pointless. The goggles make sense because you can just look down and under. But that little tube thing, mine always fills with water. I don't like breathing
through my mouth.
You know, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to blow it out.
I'm a very impatient person. I would rather sit on the beach, beer or two.
Yeah.
You know, just, okay, the water looks good.
Yeah.
I'll trust that down there at the bottom there's a very pretty reef or something
like that. Yeah, there
Someone
is.
Else can take a picture and show.
Yeah, I love snorkeling, depending on where you are. And the scuba diving thing, I'm with you. That freaks me out because if you get down there and something goes wrong.
Right. I did that for a while, but blew my, I can't, my ears got all jacked up and everything, so I can't do it anymore. But yeah, that's fine. I mean, the hardest part is trying to learn how to breathe with a respirator and all that. And just, regular, I should say, and do all that.
And also, try not to run out of oxygen.
That's like part of it.
You're 150 feet down looking at some shipwreck and the tank runs empty. You're going to have a bad day.
That's why
you
wear a watch. Yeah. You know how much time you have.
I did feel like a little, I don't know. I don't know the word I'm looking for because I met a 12-year-old girl who was a scuba diver.
Yes.
She'd been scuba diving last time we were on whatever island. And literally, her parents had brought her down there. And she's like, yeah, we're going out today. And I'm like, so how long do you go down? And she's like, 30, 45 minutes. It just depends on the like, total confidence.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no.
Well, that's what, you know, Tiger Woods. I've read that Tiger book that came out that Armin Katayan wrote last year. Tiger, as part of doing his whole military fascination thing, was doing crazy dangerous scuba. Deep dive certified, cave diving, and all this crazy stuff.
Cave diving's another one.
No way.
You know, those poor kids in Thailand, you know, who got stuck because the water level went up and it took them like 3 weeks to get out of there. That's why you'll never see me. You won't even see me in a cave, let alone cave diving. I'll stay above ground. Thank you very much. All right. Now, this happened late Thursday night going into Friday, but we haven't really had a chance to chat about it, and the video's come out. Did you see this video of the Carolina Panthers offensive lineman in a bar fight in Augusta?
No.
Oh. Yeah, what did Deion Sanders say he gave Andre Rison a two-piece snack when they had that fisticuff in the Falcons 49ers game? Yeah, Taylor Hearn, who is 6'4", 315 pounds, and it's all in surveillance video. He's in Augusta, Georgia, late Thursday night going into Friday. He gets in an altercation outside a bar. It appears, based on the video, and I don't think Hearn has made any public comment, but it appears on the video that Taylor Hearn of the Carolina Panthers picks out a couple guys that are substantially smaller than him.
Right.
And words are exchanged, and it becomes a scuffle, it becomes a fight. Taylor Hearn gets knocked the blank out.
TMZ, Mike.
Knocked.
Wow.
Knocked the you-know-what out.
He's lucky he didn't crack his head wide open on the curb. I'm watching TMZ Sports has the video that Mike's talking about, guys, so check it out. But, yeah, that's
I mean, down like someone with a sack of doorknobs hit him right in the face. He did get back up.
Right.
And continued to fight.
But it was more like middleweight, heavyweight. So he was giving up some power and some pounds.
This would be like Clubber Lang against Rocky Balboa, you know, where Rocky comes up basically to his chest. Except in reverse. Like that Rocky Balboa clipped this guy.
So did he pick these guys? Do we know why he's picking these guys?
He's punching it's like a little unclear.
He's wailing at like three different guys. Yeah. So he's obviously tuned up. So he's pretty lit. It looks like he's allegedly
lit. Something happened inside the bar that led to this. It happened outside the bar. No one arrested, by the way. No one arrested.
Wow.
Cops came. Hearn stayed. Talked to the cops. No one arrested. If you've heard of Taylor Hearn, you probably know that he went to Clemson, was on their national championship team from 2016, played four games for the Panthers last year, protecting Cam Newton, got jacked up.
Yeah, he goes
by someone half.
Well, like listen, a redwood in the forest. Baby.
You know what? Just it's not the size of the dog, Mike Bell.
It's a dog in a fight, Joe.
It's not the size of the dog.
Well, if you look at Pac-Man Jones against our old buddy Frank down there at the airport, Pac-Man was probably giving up 20 pounds.
Oh yeah,
it right? doesn't matter. Pac-Man knew what he was doing.
Yeah. You know what? Adam didn't want to fight that day either. I mean, he just got his chicken.
I mean, right. I didn't want to fight. You got your Popeye's three piece. The last you want to do is start wailing on somebody.
Exactly.
Mike Conti, in case you missed it, guys, is brought to you, as always, by our friends at Resurgence Orthopedics. From neck to toes, muscles and bones, get moving again with Resurgence Orthopedics. We'll talk to you in the 5 o'clock hour. Hey, coming up, though, we'll talk about the dogs. Is this going to be the best season for Jake Fromm?
Fromm time!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.